What's up, everyone? Pro Football Weekly Podcast is back, and we appreciate you being with us as we break down the final week of the regular NFL season. But frankly, Eric, I don't know that we'll do a ton of breakdowns because by the time we talk with the listeners again, there's going to be a ton of changes around the NFL. So I guess we'll call it sort of our unofficial Black Monday preview podcast.
It's sad. I know. That's depressing. You know? I want this to be an uplifting show. Maybe we can figure out next week how to atone and start talking about really exciting and good and qualified young candidates to take these jobs. But you're right. You know, it's funny. We were doing our Chicago Football Now show we just taped a few minutes ago, and I sort of off the cuff said something like, I'm going to set the over-under at 8.5 or 9. Did I undershoot? I mean, could there be more than 9 head coaching vacancies? I keep tweaking the numbers a little and adding and subtracting, but I guess you could have as many as 10 or 11 and as few as 7 or 8, but yeah, there's going to be a lot of movement.
Yeah, there's not going to be less than half a dozen, I don't think. So how do we get here? I mean, I don't know that we're going to go case by case. Maybe we will quickly, but just first, you wrote a really good column this week at ProFootballWeekly.com about how Sean McVay is both the best and the worst thing to happen to the 2018 coach hiring cycle. And our team's going to maybe think that the grass is greener than it ultimately is, because I just don't know if there's a number of qualified candidates that's going to reach sort of the number we're forecasting a potential vacancy.
Yeah, and I won't recap all of everything I wrote. I mean, I'm saying McVay should get Coach of the Year honors. Yep. He's done a fantastic job. What I'm saying is I don't think there are a lot of McVays out there, and I just don't think – I think teams are foolish if they say, well, all right, let's just go get the zippy hot young offensive-minded guy and we'll – sit him down with our young quarterback and boom, instant success. It just doesn't happen. And, any kind of a coaching hire that breaks the mold, whether it's John Gruden at 32, whether it's Mike Tomlin beating out some Steelers blue bloods at age 35, or, you see teams try to mimic that afterwards. Raheem Morris was a good example. I think a lot of people felt like this is Mike Tomlin Jr. The Bucs are going to be set here. Those type of moves, when you try to follow the trend or see which way the wind's blowing, they tend not to work out. I'm not saying don't give these young, hot coaches a look, but not everybody is equipped to handle this thing. And Sean McVay may have losing seasons the next few years.
Right.
Again, it all has to be in perspective, I think.
Pardon the cliche, but it is a copycat league.
Yeah.
And just one example,
yeah.
Eric, we saw that little nifty shovel pass down near the goal line work for a couple teams after it worked for, the Chiefs in week one.
Right.
But then what starts happening? Teams figure it out. And maybe some of these clubs are going to find the next young up-and-comer. But again, check out the column on ProFootballWeekly.com. Eric has plenty of examples that show how it doesn't always work, obviously. So before we kind of break down a few of the specific circumstances, I thought maybe we'd weigh in on the least deserving and most deserving coaches that should be on the hot seat that could be served their walking papers this week. The James Harrison story took on a whole new form yesterday afternoon. We're taping here on Thursday, and some reports started coming out of the Steelers locker room indicating James Harrison had phoned it in a long time ago, Eric. So maybe with a little bit more of that knowledge, it's not as stunning to see that he is now with the Patriots after being released by the Steelers over the weekend.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear both sides of it, and I still am amazed at the amount of sort of headspace that the Patriots exist in the Steelers' minds. I mean, we know it's a rivalry at this point. We know the Steelers have had trouble beating them and things like that, but still, I mean, there was a lot of animosity, and when you hear Pouncey say something like, look, his legacy is ruined here, I've erased, any impact he's had on this team, you hear Bud Dupree give specific examples about when James Harrison would sort of tune out in meetings and not be a part of things and things like that. I mean, look, Harrison's got to respond. I know he did talk and kind of say that there were 3 instances that he reached out to New England and said, to Pittsburgh and said, release me. If you're going to use young guys, that's fine. So it is a bit of a two-sided, he said version of this thing, but yeah, I mean, if he did quit on his teammates, Harrison should be blamed. But the Steelers also should let the guy go, and now that he's been released, and let him play for another team. That's how it works.
I want to apologize to the listeners. We're using one microphone that doesn't have the wind cover on it, and of course, because Dan Mott, our producer, complimented me for using it the right way on the early podcast this morning, I'm pretty sure I was all up in your guys' business the first couple minutes here.
Your
so
levels
I have not
are
moved the microphone
all messed up.
Further back, and I apologize to Dan Mott and to our listeners if I was coming in a little too hot there for a second. It was Bud Dupree who came in the hottest. You're right, Pouncey had some scathing critiques of Harrison, but off the top rope, I think Bud Dupree said, because there's been some speculation that maybe Harrison is going to help the Patriots with the Steelers game planning and sort of get in the Steelers huddle, if you will. And Bud Dupree said, well, I'm not sure how that's going to happen because I don't remember the last time I saw him in a meeting. So it kind of speaks to, at least, you know, by the Steelers accounts, how Harrison did check out. And, you know, with all that being said, Eric, he's going to have fresh legs, if nothing else. I know he's 39 years old, the oldest defender in the NFL, but he had played, I want to say, less than 50 snaps all season with the Steelers. I don't know, just gut instinct. Does he make a difference for them in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's funny. I counted 38. Other people have said 40, so I'll have to go ahead and double-check my numbers. But the point is, it's like, you know, right, we're talking 3-4 dozen defensive snaps all year. The majority of them came in the Kansas City game in Week 7, and there was a specific reason why he was playing in that game. He's owned Eric Fisher in recent matchups. He's torn him up, and I wrote about this on the website. Guess who the Patriots might face first? Kansas City. And so, yeah, in a specialized role where his snap count doesn't exceed 20 in a game, I think it makes sense. I wouldn't be shocked if he's a little bit more impactful as a run defender than he is as a pass rusher. We know one of the reasons the Steelers haven't been employing him is their system right now kind of favors OLBs who can drop, and you don't want him, you know, he's not going to be covering Kareem Hunt or Le'Veon Bell. I mean, that's just not going to be the case. So, yeah, they've had trouble setting the edge against the run, New England Patriots have, and they've also had issues rushing the passer.
Right.
If he can just give him a little bit, you know, learn the defense this week and next and get ready for the playoff game, I wouldn't be shocked if he gives a tiny bit of an impact, sure.
And remember, a lot of Chiefs fans will say if Eric Fisher isn't forced to hold James Harrison in the playoffs last year, it's the Chiefs that would be playing the AFC title game and not the Steelers.
Absolutely.
So it was a great point by Eric in his column. I guess it was Wednesday. You can still check it out on the website. But I'm always amazed how Eric has these fresh takes 5 minutes after news breaks. No one else is
sizzling hot.
No one else is coming with his angles. I enjoyed that read. Eric, let's talk a little Black Monday. You're right. It is depressing. I mean, even just the name is depressing, obviously. And, you know, these guys pour their heart and soul into these jobs, you know, working long, long hours. And for many of them, it's not going to matter because they're going to be on to new beginnings come Monday. Which situation sort of surprises you the most that it's being discussed at this juncture? Is there a coach that you think, both ways, I mean, it could be Hugh Jackson. I'm stunned that Hugh Jackson looks like he's going to be back in 2018. But I wonder who jumps out at you among this, as we said, a list that could run 10 teams deep.
Bill O'Brien comes to mind.
I think so, too.
You know, I think he can coach.
No one had a raw deal this year, losing, you know, the players that he did anyway.
Two of their three best defenders, you know, obviously high-priced guys in Merciless and Watt, and losing Deshaun Watson, who looked like he could be a savior. He was 3-3, let's make that clear. But one of them was a last-minute loss at Seattle. One was a last-minute loss at New England. One that O'Brien, frankly, didn't coach very well in the final 2 minutes, I thought. But still, I mean, that's a little bit surprising, even with the reported tension with Rick Smith, and he could be gone too. Vance Joseph, first-year guy, he comes to mind. I can kind of sort of get why Jack Del Rio might be feeling a little heat in Oakland, but I'm still a little surprised given the extension he got. Was that beginning?
Just last year?
Yeah, was it last calendar year?
Season.
So a little over a year ago. So
technically, it would have been this year, but after last season.
Was it after last season? So February, okay.
Yep.
I couldn't remember if he got it midseason or not. It all blends together. But
sure.
I guess those are the ones that surprised me the most. And then maybe Jay Gruden as well.
There you go. Yeah, I think we need to go there next because we all know about the dysfunction that that Washington, that franchise kind of lives in, sort of lives for, if you will. And you just had the unceremonious departure of Scott McLuhan, all the kind of nasty stuff that was aired out publicly with that. So they headed into this year. You knew there were a ton of defections. You lose all the receivers, and you lose the hotshot coordinator who goes on to be the coach of the year. And yet he's got a chance to get him to 500. And Kirk Cousins has played extremely well again. He's earned that next huge contract he's going to get. We don't think it's going to be in Washington. Gruden's team plays hard every week, despite the fact that they've been as injured, you know, maybe not as injured as Houston, maybe not the headliner names of some other clubs. But the offensive line, both fronts are in absolute tatters at this point in the season. And it seems like they're never a team that no-shows. We can't say that about a lot of the other guys on this list. We'll get to some of them here in a minute.
Yeah, I feel feel like the season turned on them when they blew the late lead against New Orleans. Mm-hmm. You know, they played well. They looked like they were beating the snot out of them. I think they were up, what, 15 in the last, you know,
four or five minutes
yeah. of the game, right? And then they lose in overtime. That was a tough blow. They win the next week against the, like 4 days later against the Giants. But, you know, since then, blowout loss at Dallas, blowout loss at the Chargers. You know, narrow victory over Blaine Gabbert and the Cardinals. Good score, but maybe in a somewhat uninspiring win over the Broncos. I just feel like it hasn't been as good as the first half of the season. Again, I'm still surprised that he would be let go. That would lead me to believe that, Daniel Snyder or Bruce Allen or Eric Schaefer feel like they can get a better coach, because I think Gruden would go to Cincinnati or wherever and be a head coach somewhere else right away. Maybe Chicago. I don't know. But, yeah, just that you have to – if you're going to fire your coach, you have to be very confident that you have two or three options to replace him, unless you have somebody locked in and you're going to circumvent the Rooney rule.
Yeah, and I just I don't know. I'm not seeing it. You know, it's an interesting landscape. There are a lot of candidates who certainly, you know, have some intrigue, but I just – I don't know. I think Gruden is a really good coach. I think that could turn into a big mistake. Let's stick with Gruden for a minute, Eric. Is this the year that his brother – John gets back in the fold, throws his hat back in the ring? There have been, it seems, even more rumblings, even more sort of, I don't know, worthwhile rumblings than we've heard the past couple.
Yeah, I've sort of laughed at some of the rumors in recent years. It was like Bill Cowher all over again. Oh, he's coming back, and it's the right situation. They're going to pay him, you know, $11 million a year, whatever. I didn't really believe it before. I think I felt like there's a stronger chance that he would consider it. And one of the more interesting things is that he has reportedly talked to, reached out to some possible coordinators, some possible coaching candidates. And remember in Oakland, I mean, he had some guys who weren't super well known. I mean, Bill Callahan was, but there were some assistants he had that he'd kind of plucked out of nowhere, like Bill Belichick has with the Patriots. So, you know, it's not as if Gruden would need this quote unquote rock star coaching staff of established guys and all that. I think he would be confident going in with some grinders, some lesser known guys. So, I don't know. Yeah, Gruden grinder.
Right?
I didn't even realize I'd said that. Yeah, but just some guys who can work 20-hour days and not flinch. But yeah, Tampa seems like a possibility for him this year. I think he wants to stay home. If he's going to do it, that may be the place.
Well, it's interesting that both of his former stops, we mentioned Del Rio at least as a possibility.
True,
the Raiders, and you know, arguably the most disappointing team in the NFL this season, although I'm positive we said it. Go to the website, go to the first podcast of the year. I think we had some reservations. This isn't revisionist history. I know I did. I wondered about this Raiders roster, but
absolutely we did. Yeah.
So that could be interesting. What I was going to say, though, excuse me, I lost my train of thought for a moment, both with Oakland and Tampa, and you could throw in other teams, too, here with Chicago. Well, right, Indy is a potential Gruden landing spot, but I was just going to say overall, maybe what makes this year a little bit unique is there are the presence of some potential franchise quarterbacks on a lot of these rosters where there could be change, whether you're talking about Jameis Winston in Tampa, Derek Carr in Oakland, Mitch Trubisky in Chicago. I'll throw another name at you, Eric. What about Mike Mularkey in Tennessee? What if they missed the playoffs? Remember, that was an arranged marriage with John Robinson, and they haven't really done Marcus Mariota any favors. He's taken a huge step back this year.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's one that I keep putting in the no category until we have, you know, right, until they somehow tumble out of the playoffs or whatever. Or let's say they squeak in and they get blown out by the Jags. I mean, I wouldn't be stunned. We've seen playoff teams have their coaches fired. We've seen a Lovie Smith fired after a 10-6 season. You know, Jim Caldwell was 1 year removed from a Super Bowl when he got fired. Crazy things happen in this league. You know, Jason Garrett has been on the media hot seat. He was coach of the year last year. So, you know, we have short memories in this league. Absolutely. I haven't been able to penetrate Tennessee. I mean, that sounds bad. I haven't been able to get much information. I haven't been able to tap into Tennessee very much and get much. They're a pretty tight-lipped organization for the most part. But that's another fascinating one. And I think a coach could look at that and say, small market, easy division, young QB, I can go there and do something.
Yeah, in the presence of a Hall of Famer and Dick LeBeau still currently. you know, it is an interesting one, and I guess I would just add to that that, well, again, John Robinson and Mike Mularkey, it's an arranged marriage. Let's move for a second here to another arranged marriage, Eric, in Detroit. Mm-hmm. Jim Caldwell seems to be in big trouble. The president there, Rod Wood, wouldn't comment on his status after that loss in Cincinnati last week. He seemed to kind of make it work with Bob Quinn initially. Caldwell's had some success. He's been in the playoffs twice in 4 years. He's got a record that's slightly above 500, but it seems that maybe Quinn is going to want to go out and get his own guy for a roster that's kind of just been pretty average. I think those are Jim Caldwell's words this week, not mine.
Yeah, his candor this week was actually pretty impressive. And Jim doesn't expound very often, but I think he's got good perspective, and I think he kind of knew – you know, where the handwriting lies at this point, and knows that loss last week was hurtful. You know, that really put a dent in his chance of coming back. And, you know, the story has changed a little over the past 6 months from when we saw them in camp to, hey, what's your contract status to? Oh, he signed an extension to. Right. Oh, geez, this contract is actually made of, you know, very flimsy paper, and it can be ripped up pretty easily. So, yeah, it's too bad, because I actually kind of like Jim and think he's done some good things. But as you pointed out, the big games, the big opportunities, the big situations, they've come up short.
And it's weird, because I feel like his team really does like to play for him.
I agree.
And I feel like you always hear positive things coming out of that locker room. And yet that certainly goes against the inability to show up in these big moments, or the way maybe Jim hasn't prepared. I'm not quite sure, but it is a little odd.
And they've, you know, he made the right move getting rid of Joe Lombardi and going to Jim Bob Cooter. You know, it's a move that's almost universally been praised, even if their run game has struggled and all that. You know, Jim Bob Cooter's done good things for Matthew Stafford. Terrell Austin is a hot candidate. I don't even know if he's going to be an option there if they move on from Caldwell. I don't know. But he's a name that's been in the mix. So, I mean, they've done some good things. This was a team that wasn't, you know, terribly good before he arrived, and I don't know. I guess I'm just sort of ambivalent about the whole thing.
It's a good point that he has both coordinators, Caldwell does, are names that have been mentioned on the potential list of future head coaches. So we'd see maybe if Quinn would stay in house, although, again, that staff was put together before Quinn arrived. So that'll be an interesting one. Obviously, they currently have the highest paid player in the NFL, Matthew Stafford, and I think we can all agree that he has not been their problem. Eric, on the flip side, we talked about surprises, and I don't want to put it this way because, again, we hate seeing anyone get fired. But some guys, frankly, just sort of deserve the fate that's coming at this point. And I think it's sort of funny that the guy most deserving seems safe in Hugh Jackson. But who else has the writing been on the wall for a while, and kind of just, you know, if you will, we could almost pre-write the stories now. Not that we would do that, but you know that these things are coming.
Yeah, I mean, right. Let's start with Hugh, and I still feel that something is going to happen there. I just the moment John Dorsey arrived as the new general manager, it represented a sea change. And I know who signs the checks, and I know that Jimmy Haslam is the owner, and he's got final say. But is there a more impressionable and needy owner in the NFL than Jimmy Haslam, who is, you know, now handed over the roster decisions and the personnel department? They're going to be sweeping changes in the scouting department too. I just feel like there's going to be some sort of we talked about these forced marriages or arranged marriages. I think there's going to be an arranged divorce here. I just get that feeling. So starting there and working backward, I mean, obviously there's just, you know, there will be obvious candidates, I think, for teams that will enter 2018 on the hot seat. I think some of these guys who do keep their job, Todd Bowles, I think will, you know, revert back to that hot seat as well. You know, if Bill O'Brien can save his job, he'll be leading that list to Vance Joseph, we mentioned, you know, Del Rio, et cetera. So I guess that's where I'm at. What do you see at some of these sort of borderline situations?
Well, I mean, we've hit on a couple of them. I think probably Mike Mularkey's fate is more than likely tied to whether they do sneak into the playoffs or not. He wouldn't do it on a high note, but possibility there. And again, Jack Del Rio, maybe Mark Davis can't, you know, swallow hard on 3 years of a deal, but he heads into next season, on really shaky standing as well. Sticking with the Browns for a second, we'll say that who knows what's going to happen. I tend to agree with you. I think John Dorsey is too smart, and he's been there long enough now to realize that this probably isn't salvageable. But what does the presence of Dorsey do to the stigma of the Browns?
Great question. Yep.
does he immediately change that? I mean, I wonder, because obviously any qualified candidate that they're going to be able to draw in is going to have serious reservations just because it's the Browns and because of the cemetery of head coaches and quarterbacks and a lack of continuity.
And you remember when they tried to, you know, the botched hiring of Mike Pettine. I mean, he was about their eighth choice or whatever. They said he was their fourth choice, but, you know, let's be honest. He wasn't at the very top of their list, nor close to it. So, you know, you think about that and just how unattractive that job was, even with the you know, war chest of draft picks they have, and you can work with a young pass rusher like Myles Garrett, and you've got, you know, other pieces on defense that look to be good. I mean, you know, even with that and the possibility of Betonio and Joe Thomas on the offensive line if he comes back, I mean, that's all great, but this has been an unattractive job that has only maybe gotten slightly better because John is a respected football guy. I suspect that if he does make a change, it'll be somebody that he's worked with before and has trust in.
We have a separate podcast talking just Bears, so I'm not going to – John Fox would certainly belong on this list of guys who are just imminently, you know, fireable at this point and will be soon. But check out the Pro Football Weekly Bears podcast if you want to hear about that. You can also find it at iTunes. Make sure you're subscribed and have rated and reviewed all of our podcasts. We really do appreciate that. I should have said it sooner. Our great sponsor, Loot Crate, the best surprise you know is coming. Check them out at lootcrate.com. A big thank you to Dan Mott, our producer. He's Eric at home. I'm Arthur Eckers. We have about 5-10 minutes left. I'm just getting some stuff out of the way. I had mentioned on the Pro Football Weekly Bears podcast a candidate, Eric, that I just sort of keep coming back to. I don't even know if he's ready to leave the college ranks or not, but I just – it seems like everyone I talk to can agree that David Shaw has what it takes, the Stanford head coach, when he is finally ready, because NFL teams have been eyeing him for a couple years now, and he hasn't been ready to leave Palo Alto yet. So I'm throwing David Shaw out there. He is as intriguing to me as any candidate. Do you have one or two that you've kind of honed in on that, you know, again, this is such a crapshoot. No one knows, including the GMs. That's why there's such a high turnover rate at both head coach and GM level. But a guy that sort of strikes you as someone, I don't want to say is going to be the next Sean McVay, but someone's going to come in and have some success, have a plan and some success both short-term and long-term.
Yeah, and you're right about Shaw in terms of checking out off all the boxes. He's a really smart guy. He's the face of a franchise kind of guy. He's 45, so he's in that perfect range where I think he's 45, where he's young but not too young and old but not too old, and he's worked with Jim Harbaugh. He played under Danny Green and Bill Walsh.
Exactly.
I mean, his dad was an NFL assistant. I mean, like, you couldn't draw it up any better. The fact that his teams at Stanford have been as good as they have, you know, there's lots of.
I love
of like
that background of influences, too. He's got it's really diverse, and it seems like he's able to draw on some different sort of methods and philosophies and kind of blend them all together and has helped turn around that program.
Yeah.
So.
You know, as far as other. I guess, you know, everyone's sort of wondering, would Nick Saban ever come back? Would Jim Harbaugh come back? Yeah, those are sort of pie-in-the-sky guys that would only join, you know, one or two or maybe three different franchises at the right time. I think both are staying. I'm not even thinking about either one right now until there's some real smoke on the, you know, to that fire. So if there's a college coach that I've always respected and admired and think is a very good possibility, it's Kyle Whittingham at Utah. And I look at him and just think, man, he is a really good football coach. And okay, maybe he's a little bit older because he's pushing up into that kind of – I guess he'd be similar to what Bruce Arians was when he – was Arians like 59 or 60 when he got his first job, right?
All right, yep, give or take a year. Yep.
So, you know, Whittingham is in his mid to late 50s as well. But the fact that his teams have always shown up in big games, that he hasn't always had the best talent to work with at Utah, he's been a really good coach. So – you know, that's a possibility of a more of a long shot, but there have been some teams who have looked into him that I know for certain have him on a short list. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just trying to think of some of the young assistants who might make. I heard you guys talking on the Bears podcast. Pete Carmichael, I think for years, has kind of flown below the radar. As far as Saints offensive coordinator, we know he doesn't call plays as much as Peyton does, but mm-hmm. Drew Brees has gone way out of his way to make it known how much Pete does there. So I think he's a possibility.
you know, you mentioned Joe Lombardi and Jim Caldwell correctly moving on from Lombardi, of course, another former Sean Payton assistant to get to Jim Bob Cooter. But just because it didn't work for Lombardi doesn't mean it won't for Carmichael. Obviously, Carmichael was there another two or three years, continuing to be a sponge and soak up all the teachings of both Sean Payton and Drew Brees. So an interesting name. And yet, Dennis Allen, too. It's crazy to think about because I think we both maybe even said on this podcast he could be in trouble after the start they had in September. And he's overseen a really nice turnaround. Of course, he would be a second-shot guy, had the brief stint with Oakland. So, guys, there are lists at ProFootballWeekly.com. I'm going to go ahead and update them again soon. We did a Bears-centric list, but we'll have more on this, obviously, in the coming week. There's going to be a ton of news. There's a few. There's actually quite a few Week 17 games that matter, Eric. We're only going to get to one or two of them. And I think the fact that the Falcons are the defending NFC champions and they will welcome the Panthers, Carolina still has an outside shot at winning their division. That's kind of the big one. We can talk Chargers, Raiders. We can talk Saints, too. But what do you think about what'll happen in Hotlanta Sunday?
Yeah, Falcons just haven't looked like a postseason team to me lately. And you know, some of the things that have happened with, you know, whether it's Matt Ryan and Julio not hooking up, whether it's the defense giving up some more plays, and you know, it just, I don't know. I know the Sark story, that angle has kind of gone to the side a little bit. I don't think that's necessarily the biggest concern at this point, but, you know, can they put a complete game together? And I still think of them as dangerous, but they're unpredictable too. So, you know, the Panthers obviously come in with a lot to play for as well. It's going to be a great game. Cam Newton in his hometown. He's been effective lately. You know, I keep leaning Falcons because of that desperation factor, but Panthers are a good football team. We can't rule them out.
Right. Yeah, not to I don't want to cop out, but I think this one could be as close as maybe you take the field goal on the team playing at home because these clubs know each other super well, and they have some similarities in that they're both still kind of quote-unquote dangerous, but pretty inconsistent too. We expect that from Cam. I don't know that we necessarily expected that from Matt Ryan in his post-MVP season, even without Kyle Shanahan. Do you think it'll be chalk in the AFC, Eric? The Ravens just need to, I think they host Cincinnati.
Yep.
And as long as they win, they're in. And as long as Tennessee, well, that's not any layup with the way Jacksonville got pounded last week. I think they're going to have plenty of motivation to try and keep Tennessee out of the playoffs. But if those two teams win at home, that will round out the AFC field, I believe.
Right. So we then have Ravens going to Kansas City, I believe. And then we would have, no. So you're saying, wait, if the Titans win and the Ravens win, you're saying?
Right, then that'll round out the AFC field.
Right.
And because if one of those teams loses, it opens the door potentially for the Chargers and Buffalo.
Gotcha, right, okay. Yeah, my head hurts too much to actually think about specific
the whole
matchups.
Playoff scenario.
Well, yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself here.
Yeah. We'll have time to break down the actual playoff slates, but I just wonder if you see the two, they're both favored at home in Tennessee and Baltimore, and again, they're the two teams that control their own playoff livelihood.
Yeah, I don't think I can say the Ravens are dangerous, but they're playing better, you know, mm-hmm. and there's been improvement, and Joe Flacco's done some nice things, and that defense can still travel, and so, you know, they're dangerous to maybe win a playoff game if they get in, you know. So I like them to take care of business, and the Jaguars have said they're going to play hard, and they have a reason to play in that game against the Titans. And you know, I think they should maybe punt and hope they see him in round one at home? Absolutely, because I think they'd have a great chance of winning that game. But it sounds like they're going to play it off, which is the sort of the Tom Coughlin, Doug Marrone kind of way.
It's easy to forget, though, way back in whatever it was, week two or week three, Tennessee went into Jacksonville and handled them. But obviously,
what was it, 37-16 or something?
I was trying to remember
that?
Because I didn't think Jacksonville had let up a 40 spot prior to last week, and they haven't. But you're right, it was high 30s, and it got out of hand after halftime. I believe it was a one-score game.
That's right.
Heading into intermission. So.
It was a really good, tightly contested defensive game, and then, right, it just sort of blew open in the second half.
And then, again, the only reason these games would matter is if someone falters in Tennessee or in Baltimore, but you got Buffalo going to Miami and the Chargers hosting the Raiders, so those obviously still at least have some interest and certainly have, you know, and mean a lot until further notice.
Yeah, I mean, the Chargers, you know, they let it slip through when they couldn't win at Kansas City. That's the one that, now obviously the 0-4 start, losing to the Dolphins, et cetera, but yeah, I just, that was the one, they were in position to make a run there at the title, at the conference, division mm-hmm. championship. So yeah, it's too bad because I thought the Chargers had a chance to make a really interesting story there.
And with the tiny margin for error that it now currently remains, you know, Sean McDermott's decision to make that quarterback switch.
I know, it's kind of crazy.
It has crept back up on him. And regardless, the Bills could win in Miami and still miss the playoffs. And everyone will wonder about that decision to go to Nate Peterman out for that game versus the Chargers. Peterman, of course, with what, the 5 first half interceptions. So, that's about it. That, we've broken down most of the games that matter. Again, the Saints can win the NFC South with a victory in Tampa Bay, and the Vikings can clinch home field by beating the Bears at home. So I think like 8-9 out of the 16 games actually still do mean something. Is there anyone I'm forgetting? What do you think about Patrick Mahomes debuting? We'll end with that. Patrick Mahomes goes to Denver, makes his starting debut for the Chiefs. He'll do it with without a lot of his weapons, excuse me, Eric, but he's going to see a Broncos defense that could be playing for its lives.
Yeah, right. I mean, I know this is not maybe the same, you know, your father's Broncos defense, whatever you want to say. I mean, obviously things haven't gone quite according to script, but I mean, the last, you know, really 3-4 weeks, I guess, ever, the loss at Miami was not good, but then since then, their defense has played pretty well against, you know, young quarterbacks, inexperienced quarterbacks like Bryce Petty, like Jacoby Brissett, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, I can't wait to see the full arsenal. He's got all the tools. Can he do it with guys like Demetrius Harris and Albert Wilson and stuff? Maybe. Right. We'll see.
And we should add, too, that in addition to Mahomes starting for the Chiefs, Sean Mannion will be starting for the Rams. Their
Beautiful.
Playoff ticket is secure, obviously. So, you know, those games won't mean much, but it'll be interesting not only to watch those quarterbacks get their first live reps, but also the coaches that are overseeing them. Matt Nagy is a hot offensive coordinator.
Yep.
He can help his cause further by going out and having a good plan for Mahomes and seeing Mahomes execute it. I joked on set in between segments that if Sean Mannion goes out there and throws for 350 and 3 touchdowns, you thought Sean McVay's love right now was out of control. Just wait and see what could happen. If he's able to do that against Jimmy Garoppolo in the 49ers.
Right, and the Jeff Fisher hatred would grow even more, right? Another former Fisher quarterback lighting it up with him not near an NFL sideline. That would be a fun little bit of symmetry there if that happened.
Well, it'll be a fun conclusion to the 2017 NFL season, and again, it's going to be a dark Monday in a number of cities. We're going to be breaking it all down at ProFootballWeekly.com. We appreciate you being with us again on this week's podcast. He is Eric Edholm. I am Arthur Arkish. Dan Mott is producing. Loot Crate is sponsoring. Head to lootcrate.com and head to iTunes and make sure you subscribe to the PFW podcast. Thank you again, guys. We hope everyone has a happy and healthy new year, and we will look forward to bringing you all the developments in coaching searches, Black Monday, etc. at ProFootballWeekly.com.